Welcome to Season 6, Episode 2 of the Dance to Learn podcast, the Preschool Dance Teachers podcast. I'm your host, Jessica Strong. Today, I've invited special guest Corey Lozier of Dance Dance Hooray to help me answer your questions and provide advice on your struggles in the classroom. Corey is a dance teacher, studio owner, and dance education resource creator who specializes in tap dance for early childhood. I can't wait to dive into today's questions. Let's get started. Hello, dance teacher friends. Welcome back to the Dance to Learn podcast, the Preschool Dance Teachers podcast. We are in episode 2 of season 6. And if you guys listened to last week's episode, you know that we have changed the format and we're now addressing questions directly from you, our listeners, and I am bringing on very special guests for every episode to help answer your questions and your struggles that you're having in the dance studio. And today I'm really excited to introduce my special guest. This is Corey, and she is from Dance Dance Hooray. And Corey, I'm going to let you quickly introduce yourself and tell everyone a little bit more about Dance Dance Hooray and what you do.
Okay, great. Hey, Jessica, thank you so much for inviting me to be on the podcast. It's so exciting. I love talking about dance and I love talking about tap dance. So what a great forum you have here for all the dance teachers out there. As Jessica said, my name is Corey. I'm Corey Lozier and my business is called Dance Dance Hooray. I make resources, dance games, and more recently, tap lesson plans for dance teachers who teach little ones, preschool age, early elementary age, and it's kind of like a system of how you can build your tap classes to keep it engaging and interesting. So that's me in a nutshell.
Yes. And I actually, we connected on Instagram. I don't know how long ago, but I feel like
it was maybe a year ago, Yeah.
And I just remember, if you guys don't follow her on Instagram, you should. She has some really great tips. And while her tips are for preschool dance as a whole, I was very drawn to her tap dance tips for the younger ages. I don't think there are that many resources out there for tap for preschool. So what is your Instagram?
My Instagram is just @dancedancehooray. So nice and easy.
All right. Yes. But go check her out on Instagram. But we found each other on Instagram and I just thought your material was so great. So now we partner together and you produce the tap dance lessons for us here at Dance to Learn. And what I love is how we connect so much and we're so similar in what we do. Like we really believe in, you know, the handouts and the visual aids and theming. And like, I feel like we're very close and on the same page with all of that.
I completely agree. Yeah. I think that's probably why we found each other on Instagram. Our content was popping up for each other and it was like a mutual admiration society situation happening. Like, oh, I do that too. I'm not the only one.
Yeah,
I agree.
Yeah, so it's been really great. And that's kind of what we're talking today about. We have a lot of questions about lesson planning and curriculum. And then we have some questions about structuring a tap class, a little bit of big tap class. So we're going to pop in to these questions from our listeners.
Great.
Have a conversation and hopefully we can help some of our listeners out today. So I'm going to read our first question. I hope I pronounce everyone's names correctly today, but I want to say it's Malin. And Malin is from Sweden, which is awesome. I always love knowing where people are in the world. And sometimes I'm like, wow, people from Sweden follow me. I know who I am. It's crazy. I've never even been there. But this says, hi, I'm from Sweden and I found your podcast. Thank you for all of your sharing. I teach almost all ages from 4 to grownups. So you'll understand that that is a struggle in case of lesson planning. So I don't really have the time to do monthly themes right now. I do more of a general class that I stick with for all the 10 classes, but switching things along the way,
And I know that it would be beneficial to have themes and getting all the positives of that. But right now, I don't have the time for it, unfortunately. So I want to ask you for your best tips on having a non-themed class. It can still be with all the obstacles, VARC and learner's circle and all that. But how would you do a class when you don't have a theme? I guess that has happened sometimes. And also, when you have a short amount of time in a class, how and what do you prioritize for the ages 4, 5, 6, and 7? Sometimes the time just flies by. Thanks again, and looking forward to the next season. So, a lot to talk about. She really has some questions for us that she needs help with. Just so in case anybody doesn't know, I know she used an acronym in there, VARC. If you're not familiar with that, those are the four different learning types: visual, auditory, reader, would probably be the R. We can also do VACT, which is the more tactile, and then kinesthetic. So that's what she's referring to there, which I'm sure we'll talk about a little bit. But just in case anybody was like, what does that even mean? Oh man, when I first read this question, I'll be really honest, I was a little like, oh, I don't know. I don't know if I can answer this question
Yeah,
because
that's
like I've built
well,
a whole like business around conceptualized thematic lesson plans because I believe in that philosophy so much. So I want to hear what you think as far as like teaching without a theme.
This is an interesting question, and I think it comes down to, like, are you naturally a more analytical person, or are you naturally more of an imaginative person? And maybe that's what Malin is kind of struggling with. And it makes me think back to the dance that I learned as a kid growing up, and I'll just even relate it to tap dance, right? I started tap dancing first. I started tap dancing at age 3, and my teacher followed. It was, I won't say the name, but it was like a coded record that you would play in grade 1, grade 2, grade 3, and we would do the same thing every week, the same exercises. And I just loved tap dance, so it reached me. But then when I went to college, I began teaching at a dance studio there, and I would consider the owner of that dance studio such a huge influence on the way I teach. She was all about using props, using themes, using imagination, using creativity. And so for Malin, this is what I can say. You can do it. You can do it. Because at that time, I taught all ages as well. I taught the little ones all the way up through the adults. And this studio owner, she would give us, all of the staff, we would have a theme that we would have to follow. And she did it on every 2 weeks. So maybe the first 2 weeks of September, your theme is spirals. It could be something abstract. Then the next time, it could be fall. But we would have to apply concepts of that theme to every class and every lesson plan. So there is a way to do it. So that's what I wanted to say. And I think that my her question is, to me, it's two parts. So I'm going to just talk about the theme part first. I think that you had to just think about themes differently. A theme doesn't have to be some, long grand story that you have to concoct. It can just be as simple as taking an element of a theme and using the imagery of that and infusing it into all of the dance concepts. I figure, Jessica, I'll just kind of speak towards tap things, and then you can speak towards the ballet and creative movement. Okay. So when I was thinking about her question, I was jotting some things here, and let's just say that there are two main things that you want to work on with your class this week. Let's just say step heels, like toe, heel, traveling across the floor, and then shuffles or shuffle steps. So if you don't want to do an overarching theme, you can still be thematic. You can say to yourself, what do each of those steps remind me of? And how can my descriptive language help my dancer get it? So a general one I use for step heel or toe heel, I'm sure, okay, listeners at home, you might laugh, but I imagine that there are fruit snacks. I say to the kids, okay, we just opened a pack of fruit snacks and they fell all over the floor. And the only way to pick them up is with our feet. And so we have to smush our fruit snack, smush it with your toe, then smush it with your heel. We got to take two bites every time. So we're just doing toe heels, but by saying that, two bites or eat it with your toe and then eat it with your heel, they are really separating their sounds. And then for shuffles, especially when they're little, we teach even shuffles, shuffle, shuffle. Well, it kind of sounds like a clock. Say tick, tock, tick, tock, tick, tock. So there you have it. Two images that could just be part of more of an imagery theme. They don't have to go together, but I can also, you know, real quick, give you an example of ways that you can put it together with a seasonal theme or whatever's going on in the kids' lives. And if I can do it, Malin, you can do it, because it's just all it takes is, what does this remind me of? That's all you have to say to yourself. Yes, so let's say it's winter and our theme is winter and we're doing the same step heel. Could we pretend to put on our snow boots or put on our ski boots? You got to snap the toe in and then snap the heel in. Slide your toe into the boot, push your heel into the boot as we go across the floor. Or if you're doing a shuffle, pretend there's a snow shovel on your toe tap and you're shoveling the snow every time you hit the floor. So winter's coming up, so I've got winter on the brain.
Right.
Teddy bear, same thing. Well, there is a teddy bear lesson on the website. But even teddy bears, bears have front paws, bears have back paws. So our toe heel can be front paws touch the ground, then back paws touch the ground. It really doesn't have to be a big production. It can be just something little, but it can really reach your students in a different way.
Right.
So that's my answer to part one of her question. What do you think, Jessica?
Yeah, I think I kind of want to go into a story time.
Yeah, do it.
And my cat is in here, so if you hear, he's come to join the party. His name is Eddie, so if anyone wants to say hello to Eddie, he's very vocal. Anyway, so I just remember when I was a brand new teacher, and my teaching journey, I didn't do the college thing. I grew up so into the world of dance, and I just had blinders on from a very young age. I was just, I am going to be a professional ballerina, and that's what I was going to do. So I went through my childhood and my teenage years with this, I'm going to be a professional ballerina. I didn't think about college. That was never a thing for me. It was just, yeah. I'll study and then I'll go dance somewhere. So I think so many, and I know I'm not alone in that, so many people have that as their journey. And, you know, we didn't go to college when we were younger. So when I first started teaching, it was really one of those things where now I'm this starving artist in this professional ballet company, and I need to pay bills, and I'm not yep. making enough money dancing, even though I'm dancing 10 hours a day. I, you know, need to do something at night to pay my bills. So I remember my first teaching job, a lady contacted me off Facebook and she said, hey, you know, I need a really good ballet teacher. I'm starting a new dance studio. Would you be interested in teaching? And I was like, sure, why not? But I had no real life teaching experience. So when I first started teaching my classes, I did have preschool and then I had more advanced kids. And the advanced kids felt easier because I was advanced at that point. So breaking it down for beginners was definitely more of a challenge, but I didn't have themes. I really didn't even have props. I remember the first props I used were scarves, and they would sit on scarves for their spots, which was a terrible idea because all they wanted to do is put them on their head and throw them in the air. And, yeah. Don't use scarves for your spots. But I can tell you, like, my class, like, I just did general stuff, like butterfly stretch, and now we're going to point and flex, and now we're going to, you know, do a cobra stretch, and now we're going to do hickory dickory dock, which is probably the most creative thing that I had in my whole class. And then across the floor, butterfly chassis and skips, and it was just kind of all over the place, you know, like it was a dance class and they were learning skills, but there wasn't any real organization to it. Mm-hmm. And the minute that I started coming into themes was when I started my mobile program, because my goal within that mobile program was I wanted the kids to be learning in their dance classes what they were learning in school. So I started looking at the themes in the preschools that I would go into, and I would say, okay, October, we're going to do like fall and pumpkins. And then November, we'll do more thankful and turkey and all of that stuff. And then December, we're going to get into winter. So I really started looking at what were the kids learning in school and coordinating that with my classes. And I'll tell you what, when I started thinking in more of a theme, you know, like these generalized themes, number one, my classes, I felt more creative. I was coming up with far more creative ideas than I did before, because now we weren't just doing plies. We were building a snowman with our plies, or we were, you know, going skiing instead of just chasseing across the floor. Like, it just made it that much more creative. I felt the kids were a lot more engaged in what we were doing. And yeah, for me as a teacher, I just felt like every single class I went into, I had a plan. And I still do. Like, now I go in and I have a plan and I know what I'm doing. And it's really great because it takes away all of that stress. Like, how are they going to perform today? Are they going to be in it, or are they going to be not in it? So that's why I'm a big believer in the themes. And a theme doesn't, like you said, it doesn't have to be this big, huge, you don't have, like, I change what I do every single week. And I know that's probably not what a whole lot of dance teachers do. I think a lot of, they do the 2 weeks like you do, but I change what I teach every single week, which that is a lot. And you don't have to do that. You could say my monthly theme is winter. So what are things you can do in the winter? Like you said, we can go outside and we can leave footprints in the snow. We can shovel the snow. We can build a snowman. We can go ice skating. We can have a snowball fight. Like, there's so much that you can do with that theme to get you through. A theme can also be abstract. It could be a dance concept. So you could do tempo and make it more generalized, like a more, you know, we're just going to play music that's fast and slow all day and explore moving fast and slow as we practice different skills. So it doesn't have to be this grand big thing that feels overwhelming. So it can be more generalized. But I want to read it. I want to read a quote from Anne Green Gilbert's book, Brain Compatible Dance Education. And if you guys don't have this book as dance teachers, I call it like the dance teacher Bible. So I think every dance teacher needs to read this book or own this book if you don't. But in her very first chapter, it's like literally 5 pages in, she says, when class content connects to a student's life, both the brain and body gain and retain knowledge. And I'll tell you what, when we teach with themes and we can relate our dance movements back to what the kids experience in everyday life, you're going to find that they're able to remember things a lot more. Sometimes it backfires though. Like, all the other day I was like, ballet friends, what do we call this when we bend down and we lift our arms up, and they all go, picking a pumpkin. And I'm like, no, that's not what that's called. It's called a cambre. But so sometimes it can like backfire a little bit, but
that's okay. They've got plenty of time to learn that the real name is cambre. Yes, just yes. Like plenty of time to learn that a shuffle step is not a TikTok clock. It's fine.
Yeah, I know. I'm like, no, that's not what it's called. But that is kind of what we're doing. Like, we're picking a pumpkin with our arms or whatever. So so I am just a big believer in doing themes. And so my advice for Malin would be to, number one, either find the time to do it. And it doesn't have to be a lot of time. It could literally be driving to your dance studio and maybe thinking about what you have planned and saying, how could I make this, you know, I don't know if Sweden, they have winter, right? I've never been there. Like, it's cold there.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's snow. Like, so if you're driving out there and you're like, yeah, it's snowy right now, so how could I make my lesson plan more winter themed or more, you know, they have mountains or whatever. So maybe we could do like a mountain wilderness type of a theme. Like, how can I change it back? And the other advice is, if you really don't have time and you're like, nope, that is just far too much for my brain and for me to handle. There are so many great curriculums out there. Like, I feel like Malin is my customer avatar because I literally put on my website, like, I created Dance to Learn for dance teachers who don't have the time to lesson plan. So, like, you are my, like, you are the reason why I do what I do, because I do everything for you. You have your written lesson plan, you have videos, you have a playlist. You don't even have to find your music. Like, really, all you would have to do is log in, watch maybe 15 minutes worth of videos, if that, and then buy a couple props. If you want props, you don't even have to use props. I give options if you're not a prop person. And it's done for you. And then you take that into your studio. And I think you'll see that for your kids, they're going to be a lot more engaged in the content and what you're teaching. So either find the time, whether it's in the shower or driving or whatever, just think about what you're teaching, or invest in a program like Dance to Learn or Dance. There's so many. There's so many people, but obviously I'm biased for Dance to Learn and Dance Dance. Hooray.
Yes, like, yes. Same here.
We're the best. But well, no, there's so many. And so I kind of wanted, oh, what were you going
to
say?
Well, I was just going to say, I feel like sometimes people struggle, like, I should be able to do it all. I shouldn't have to look. And I have to keep, I remind myself of this too. I remind myself of this too. But like, you might be somebody who knows how to cook very well.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean you make up all of your recipes. You still buy a cookbook when you're trying something new. And you know, I have a dance studio. I own a dance studio, and I cannot teach everything. I don't teach everything. I count on, we recently incorporated acro classes into our studio. And I'm like, I don't know enough about really acro. And my instructor doesn't know enough. So I invested in something that could help us with that. And I'm like, that is totally okay. It's making us better.
Yeah.
So I think the same thing, and I feel like your lesson plans, Jessica, and my lesson plans, they give room for the teacher to still feel it's theirs and take ownership of it and make it something. They know their students best. They're going to present the information in the way that their students are going to absorb it. We're just giving a recipe and helpful tips. And like you said, it's done.
Yeah.
It's done. And your time investment is small.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's taken me honestly like 15 years to put together everything I have, and I'm still coming up with new stuff. So, I mean, I'll be doing this probably till the day I die, but I know it is time consuming, and that can be overwhelming when you have 10 hours of classes that you teach. So I totally understand the time aspect, but I think I kind of say you can't not do this, you know, like it just, from being somebody who didn't have a theme and seeing how my classes went when I was a younger, newer teacher, just sort of teaching steps and not really having organization or a reason behind anything, to where I am now, like, it's night and day. You know, you can't not invest in either the time or invest in somebody who's done it for you. I just feel like you have to make that, that decision for you and for your students, because she's going to feel like a better teacher, I think, too.
Yes.
She has all of that, you know.
I 100% agree. And I also want to say that, you know, when you do it, if she makes her own, like you mentioned, or even if she purchases it, this is something you can use year after year. You don't have to reinvent the wheel again next year. I mean, it's so nice when I look back at my old notes and I'm like, oh yeah, I love that combo. I love this theme. I love how that worked. The kids really responded well. I wonder if this group of kids is going to respond well. And 9 times out of 10, they do. Another thing that I would say to Malin is maybe just start small. If it feels overwhelming, pick a theme like winter, for, you know, like we keep saying winter, and just incorporate one winter thing in each class. One, just one. And just see, does it make your dancers, does it make their eyes sparkle? Does it make it more exciting for you as a teacher? I mean, I get bored. personally. I do it because I love imagination. I was the kid who played restaurant growing up, and I played school, and I played hotel, anything that was imaginative. So it's fun. It's fun to be doing a theme. It's fun to be a kid again, and you get to experience dance class from the point of view of that little preschooler. And that's a gift. I think that's a gift.
That is a really great idea. One thing that I do every month is I do a themed freebie. It's not even every month, it's every week. I do Movement Monday. And every Monday I go on and I share a free, and it's always themed. I've shared fall movement cards. This last week I shared terminology turkey, so they can color in a turkey feather. So it's always something themed. And so even maybe if she doesn't have the money to invest in a program, even just get a freebie, include that in your classes. Again, it's already done for you. Like, there's so many little things that I think she can do. But one thing I do want to do for her, because I believe in the theme and concepts and all of that so much, that I want to let her try Dance to Learn and the Dance Dance Hooray, because your tap lessons are included. And I just want to give her a month free, and tell her, give it a try. Let us know how you like it, and if she comes back to me and says this is a terrible idea, then I don't know what to do. But I don't think she will say that. I think she'll see a difference in her kids. Like, I really think, even if she just takes one thing from one lesson plan and applies it in her classes, I do think that will make a believer out of her, in as far as like, yes, I see, I do either need to find the time or make an investment in this. So if you're okay with that, because your stuff is in there, I definitely want to let her try it, figure it out, and see what she thinks as far as the theme. And I'll follow up with her and then maybe give an update on how she's doing in her class.
Let's do it. I like that
Okay.
idea. Definitely.
I'm gonna do it. So I
Okay,
will
cool.
email you, Malin, and give you a month free of our awesome thematic lesson plans that you can
Yay.
in your dance classes. I think we'll have a believer out of her.
I think so too. I think you're right.
That was a lot, because she had two parts, right?
So that's what I was just thinking. The second part of her question was sort of asking, what do we prioritize in a class for ages 4, 5, 6, 7? So that's a good question. And I bet you a lot of people wonder that. So I'll talk about it for tap. And I guess I have a more conceptual side of that. And then actually this funny, Jessica, this reminds me of your reel when you were talking about a lesson plan structure framework versus the actual thing. So in that same way, there's like conceptual things that I try and do in each class, and then a set little kind of framework to follow. So I'll talk tap if that's all right. So no matter what skill set that we're working on, I always want to incorporate sort of these three main concepts in every children's tap class. So number one is, and gosh, this I'm this I'm this is what why I advocate for children's tap dance right here, a connection to the downbeat in the music. Right. So every style of dance, you have to understand musicality, and we're moving to music. And tap dance is such a vehicle for that, in addition to being, maybe your heart's pleasure, like it is for me. But even if it's not, it's a connection to that. So a connection to the downbeat in the music. For the little guys, for the 4 to 5s, I do this a lot of times with just marching, putting on different songs. We're marching to music, we're shaking egg shakers, we're shaking bells, we're clicking rhythm sticks, we're counting out loud. For the ages 6 to 7, it looks something more like, I call it keep the beat with silent feet, which is a game I play where I'll put on a song and the kids have to keep their feet silent, bounce their knees on the beat, and bounce their bodies on the beat, and try and we call it, catch the downbeat. So they do that. We also sing, both of these age groups will sing rhythms out loud. And then for the older kids, we learn how to count along with our combos. So that's concept one that I do. Concept two for tap for the younger students, which benefits them greatly as they get older, is clarity of sound. What sounds are you trying to make? Which parts of your shoe make those sounds.
Right.
So for the age 4 to 5, that really means understanding how to isolate and use the different parts of your tap shoe. If anyone's looking for a way to do this and introduce it to your students, my first tap class lesson plan that Jessica has at Dance to Learn, this really breaks it down. We experiment with listening to the different sounds we make with different parts of our shoe, even as we explore into different steps. For the older kids, for me, that means going slow. Going slow and breaking down steps and then putting them back together. I also will, sometimes, you know, when you're teaching, and I'm sure you've seen this, Jessica, you're giving cues for the kids to do something a certain way, and you can see that they're hearing you and they're saying it with you, but they're totally not doing it, or they keep making the same quote unquote mistake. So in tap, it's a lot about, well, like maybe they're missing a sound or using the wrong part of the shoe. So I'll say, all right, everybody, hold on a minute. I need your help. I'm not sure if I'm getting this one. And then I'll do the step and I'll say, was that right? Or am I missing something? Right. And then, you know, the one who's making the mistake will shoot their hand up and give me the correction, the exact right correction. And I'll say, oh my gosh, you're right. Let's all try that again. And then that usually prompts that child to then look at what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And then, oh, I have a revelation. Oh, I'm missing that sound. Oh, just like she did. Yes. So we do a lot about, you know, thinking about that. And then the last thing, overarching concept for me, is individuality. And this is another reason why I love teaching preschoolers. Mm-hmm. And it's like the magic. They have this magic where they're just not inhibited. They want to express themselves to music and they don't care who's watching. And actually, the more people watching, the better. They love it. And I really try and foster that because they lose that as they get older. And so I still do moments of individuality in my kindergarten and first grade classes. And it makes me so happy when they still do it. But especially for tap dance, because improvisation is such a huge component of tap dance and probably the hardest component for my older students to get past. They get so in their heads about it. So if I can foster that when they're little,
yeah,
hopefully it stays in there. So I just love to give them, you know, 30 seconds here and there to show me, I call it, show me your best moves or show me your favorite moves or mm-hmm. show me a rhythm you want to make. That we do before we move on to the next exercise.
Right.
So those are the concepts. I mean, I have a whole list of like tap class structure. I don't know if you want me to go into that, but yeah. I feel those concepts are the most important part.
Yeah. No, I think that's great. I think we all as teachers have things that are like, you know, when we go into our classes, we have, this is what I want to accomplish today. You know,
right.
It's kind of like starting your day and you have your to-do list and what is the most important thing. Like right now in my program at the rec center, we are getting ready for our first winter showcase. So my priority right now is to create and choreograph our dances in our classes.
Mm-hmm.
And just this Tuesday, my creative dance class, which is 45 minutes, I was doing our obstacle course, which is usually the end of class. And then we're going to do either creating or choreography. And I was like, oh shoot, I have like 2 minutes left. How am I going to fit in choreography, you know? And so one thing that I'll do, what I'll probably do, since that class is shorter than all my other classes and I do have less time, I'm going to move when I do that choreography in my class flow. But I'm glad you mentioned my reel because that was on my brain for this particular question, because every class I have a class flow and it's just like my class structure and I follow it every single time because this gives my kids the structure and the routine. So they know we start in a circle and we do our warm-ups and then they know we stand up and we do like a guided exploration. And so what I'm going to do, instead of making that towards my theme, that's going to be our choreography time. So I'm going to move that choreography time up to happen at the start of class so that I know I get to it because that's my priority. So I think it's just knowing that to-do list in your head. And if it takes us 20 minutes to get through choreography and that's longer than normal, then my developing skills section where I break down movements in my obstacle course, we'll just cut that part and we'll just get straight to the obstacle course. Or it's implementing things like we just made a huge mess with all of this stuff in my class. So I need my kids to help me clean up today instead of me just doing it by myself. And we'll have little jobs and, you know, okay, we got to clean, 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 clean. And I'm going to play one song and I need everything cleaned up, you know, and just kind of finding the moments in time that, or moments in my class that I know take up more time. And I think this is where planning comes into, because mm-hmm. I think having things done beforehand, like having your playlist already put together, because just the time that it could take you, you know, grabbing your phone and then finding the song, this is why I have the playlist already done and all of my lesson plans for my teachers, because that can be time consuming. You know, it could take a whole minute, and that's a minute you could have been doing dancing, having all of your props like ready to go for that day. You know, like I mm-hmm. always get to the studio at least 15 minutes early and get my day set up. You know, I tape out my floor, I get all my props out that I'm going to use that day, and I get everything ready. So I'm not taking any time during class kind of doing all of these things that I should have done before I even got there. So I think just little things like that. So at the end of every class, take a, what's the word, sort of a recap in your head of where did I take extra time today and how can I be more sufficient next time? What can I do to make that less time? Because I know if we have shorter classes, or how can I pull something that we ran out of time for today? Because in my opinion, everything I teach in my class is important. So it's important to me to get it all in there. You know, so, but yeah, when I only had 2 minutes for choreography, I was like, okay, so next week we'll just move that forward and do it earlier in the class so I know we get to it. And then if we don't do individual skills, we'll still get an obstacle course. They'll still practice those skills. It'll just be in the obstacle course. So, so yeah, I think those are some of the tips that I think could help for something like that. If you're like, oh no, I'm running out of time, you know?
Yeah, I think those are great. Those are great tips. And, you know, honestly, with the choreography, you moving it up, their brains are, mm-hmm. you know, primed at that moment that they'll probably be focusing well as well.
Yeah. Yeah, sometimes by the end of the class, we're all kind of ready to go home and they're like, I don't want to practice the dance again, you know?
Right.
So, yeah, doing it earlier, you know, because, yeah, I think that's an important part of classes. That choreography, I can't send them on stage without knowing what they're doing. So, yeah, I think it's okay to rearrange things if you need to. And because we're still in our circle time anyway, it's not such a major change that it's going to throw them off. And like, I don't know what we're doing right now. You know, like they're still going to be focused. We're just not going to do a themed exploration that day. We'll just do our choreography. So, and I think that's okay to make those adjustments when we need to.
Yeah, I agree.
Cool. Do you have anything else to add for Malin's question? I know she had a lot, and I think we helped her. I hope.
I hope so too. I think we addressed everything. I mean, tap class structure. I just, you know, rhythm games, warm ups of all those isolated movements, weight shifts, being able to travel with the steps, and then just basic technique. That's my structure for that. But I don't know. I feel like we answered her. I think we did it.
I know. I felt like that was really good information. So hopefully that helps you, Malin. And I really appreciate your questions. And I am going to email you some lesson plans for you to use in your classes. Cool. So let's move on to question number two. So this was actually, I follow a lady on Facebook and she's wonderful. She follows Dance to Learn. And she posted in one of the Facebook groups about an issue that she's having. And I'm going to keep her anonymous. I did ask her for permission to share her information, but I'm not going to post the group she posted in or her name.
Okay.
But it says, okay, I usually have no issues in my classes that I can't quickly resolve on my own, but here I am. I have one class of 21 students, ages 4 to 5. It's a beginner ballet tap combo class. I'm not the director, so I can't make the class smaller, but I do have two teenage assistants, and these little ones are so adorable. And I feel so bad that I can't get to each one the whole time throughout class, and some who stand in the back row just seem to be lost and distracted a lot. My classes are usually about 14 to 16, which is so much more manageable. There are zero behavior issues. They just get distracted and lost in the crowd. Other than all standing in a huge circle, which we did the first 4 weeks of classes, how can I keep everyone focusing on me or an assistant? They are super beginners, most first year of dance. Some did do creative dance last year. I feel the most basic tap steps, for example, heel steps, toe steps, they aren't getting because they just lose attention standing in the back and just can't stay visually focused to follow along. I do use props and I do keep things short and I try to grab attention by clapping and counting. I'm very animated. I smile at everyone, but some are still, after 2 months, just seem lost. They're not unhappy and they're not misbehaving. They're just lost. Can I rearrange the way we stand, or maybe are there better songs to use, more playful songs that work with tap? Things are better in the ballet portion of class. Thank you for any ideas. You can see there are always some waves in the back that are just too far away, and they end up literally sitting on the floor playing with their skirts at some point during tap. They aren't misbehaving. I like how she... They're not misbehaving. I just have to put that out there. I just want to improve, readjust how I teach to this class. We can't be in a circle all the time. They need to learn their spots as we start recital combos. And I want them getting used to standing in lines. So there's a lot there that she posted about, but I saw that I have the perfect person that can help with this. So I'm excited for your thoughts.
Well, first of all, an anonymous listener, how great, what a great teacher you are to be just so caring and aware of this. Mm-hmm. Some people would look at it like, well, then they'll get what they get, whoever's in there, but you really care about each one of these kids, and I can feel that. So congrats on being an awesome teacher already. I can also tell that you've got a lot of experience, so a big class, I'm with you on that. I agree. For me, anything over 15 feels really big. My sweet spot is like 8 to 10. I love it. I personally have a class of 17 kindergarten and first graders this year. It had a waiting list because it was a day, for some reason, Tuesdays at my studio, very popular. Everybody wants a Tuesday. But our room, our physical room cannot hold, like it's just, it would be, there wouldn't be room. But I could have been in the same boat as you. So I'm really feeling for you. But for even for my class of 17, in the room that we have, we need to have three lines because it's just not wide enough. And so I really get how the kids in the back can't always see. And the thing about tap is, it's very, you know, in ballet or even a jazz-based creative movement, you're doing motions with your whole body and the kids can see that. Tap is so intricate. A lot of the motions are with the feet. So if they can't see your feet, it's really hard to follow. And that does make a big difference. I also agree that circles are good, but I also agree that dancers need to learn how to be spatially aware in straight lines as well, for sure. For me, I don't start setting exact recital spots until around February. So I wonder if maybe my tip here can help you in that. If you can rearrange the kids each week, so the same ones aren't in front, the same ones aren't in the middle, the same ones aren't in back. In my experience, the kids who are this age, preschool, you know, 4.5, 5, they can adjust on the fly, and it's almost better to adjust on the fly. If they get too set on so-and-so being next to them, then at the recital of so-and-so is sick and there's nobody next to them, then that kid's going to freak out too. So I like to mix them up a lot until like the last minute. So here's my idea. Maybe you could make a game out of changing spots, and you're going to have to really utilize your helpers, but you have teen helpers. So that's great. If you had one line, you maybe call it your red line, and then you've got a yellow line, and you've got a green line, and you've got the kids in windows or however you do it, and then you work on a step, and then they're going to rotate spots. So I would make little teams. So one girl from the red line, one boy from the yellow line, and one child from the green line. They are all on a team. You practice the step with the music and you say, all right, high five your team and switch spots. You know, you can do a little, you can say we're doing a little switcheroo. You could say move it on up and then around to the back. You could even, you know, say red goes to yellow, yellow goes to green goes to red, and they keep rotating. I think that'll, the changing up of spots will also kind of wake up the kids who are getting a little bit more distracted. I tend to keep my classes moving at a pretty quick pace for that reason. You could also put the little teams in little mini circles and they can work together, especially those dancers who maybe did creative dance last year. So they would be, you know, your pros. They could be partnered with dancers who are newer. And when they, it's, I always find it very fulfilling to watch the dancers help each other and work together. And then you and your assistants could wander from group to group, continuing to help and check in on how everyone is doing. For me, I think that's a great way to do it. Just keep those kids who are in the back, keep moving them forward, keep changing it around. They all want to be noticed by you, and you know that. And that's why you feel, that's why your heart feels sad, because you can't notice them. But I think you can. I think you can. And this is my tip for tap. You were asking, you know, maybe there's some music that would really help, or maybe, and I'm just wondering, maybe some of the stuff is going over their heads right now. I'm wondering if you want to kind of go backwards a little bit, break it down a little more, and then build it back up, sort of like what I was saying to Malin. You might need to start off more simple than what your instincts tell you. So maybe for the number one goal, you can say, have them discover what sounds can my feet make. Make it very simple. Work on just, I only want to hear toe taps. Let's hear those toe taps. Oh, I think I hear a heel tap. Let me hear just toe taps. Make it very simple. Do things relating to the music. Clapping, stomping, moving from right to left. We're learning how to be a musician and a dancer, and that's really important for tap. And so I think there are some really great artists, children's music artists that have lots of really rhythmic songs. Off the top of my head, I don't really use any songs that are like codified tap songs. They don't appeal to me. What appeals to me is finding a children's artist that's rhythmic and then fitting my theme along with it. So like Dan Zanes has some great rhythmic songs. I mean, Lori Berkner, a lot of her songs are great for tapping as well. And then there's the sort of more out there guy, his name's Casper Baby Pants, and he has really funny songs that have great, great rhythm behind them. So even more than music, and this kind of goes back to Jessica, our common bond here, even more than music, my biggest recommendation to capture their attention is with a theme. Like, honestly, it always comes back to that for me, especially because in tap, you have to repeat and review the same skills over and over. They really cannot move on to more sophisticated things, just like you wouldn't ask a pre-ballet dancer to do a changement from fifth position and hold a passe in releve. You know, tap is the same way. These kids can only do what they can do until they can do the next thing. So there's a lot of repeating. But doing the exact same thing is boring. I think it's boring. I'd probably get distracted too. So same skill with a different theme just really opens up the ideas for different learners. And it also allows you to play with different rhythmic patterns. You know, if you're doing point together, I call a point together tap. When you tap your toe forward and then step together and then switch feet, you know, point together, point together, point together, point together, point together, freeze. And then you could start again with the left. Same step as regular point together, just a different rhythm. So the theme and the imagery make it feel like play. So I think if you're able to do that along with switching lines more often, you may see those distracted kiddos, you know, really getting excited about tap and dance class.
Yeah. I wish people could see what I was doing, because the whole time I'm like, yeah, all of that. Yes, I agree 100%. So Yeah, you know, when I was thinking about like my classes. So here's what I do. Here is my approach. So we do start class in our circle and then sort of move to waiting spots and we sit for that. And then we do our obstacle course. And when I'm first teaching like choreography dances, I bring us back to our circle and I will choreograph the entire dance in our circle so that everyone can see me. And just because I think circles are so inclusive, it gives me equal access to all of the kids and it gives all the kids equal access to me. So I love the circle. So I will choreograph the whole dance in our circle before, kind of like you, before I put them in spots for a dance. What I think for my, especially for my younger kids, because I tape out my room, everything is taped. Our circle is taped, where we wait for across the floor is taped, like everything is taped. So for me, I could put the tape and make a star and say, just go find a piece of tape and the kids are going to stand on the tape and they won't even know what formation they're in. And so I think whether you're using tape or dots or whatever, get it ingrained in their head that when they're on stage, you're going to be on a spot like you are in the dance class and make that sort of your focus. Because then it doesn't matter what they're in, if they're in a line, if they're in a circle, if they're in a star shape. Like it's just, they just know to look for the tape. And then when it's time to perform, they'll know to look for the tape. So I think that's really important, but maybe don't worry so much until you get closer and you know all of the kids know the skills, you know, to break them up into the lines, teach it in a circle. And I like the idea of smaller circles, like 10 in one circle, 11 in the other circle. The teacher can change circles. She has assistants, so she could put the two assistants in a circle. And so they're changing the circles. I also have kids, it doesn't matter what age they are, they love doing audience time, you know, and breaking it up in line by line. And then, because I think it's important for them to learn what is a good audience member and sitting and watching each other. And because dance is as much as it is performance, it's also observing, you know, like we observe it and we have feelings about what we're observing. So my kids love doing audience time. And then I think in a class that big, it gives the kids personal attention, you know, because then you can say, oh my goodness, Sally, you did your shuffle step perfectly. Good job. You know, and you can kind of give everybody, you know, I saw what you did there and that was great. And then it's more manageable. I probably wouldn't do that though until the dance is choreographed, you know, like I would kind of do that, like building up to getting into our spots. Now we know the dance, let's be an audience, let's watch our friends, and then we'll do it all together, and then they're in their lines. Because I do think they do have to know how to stand in a line to be on stage. I think making sure they know there will be tape or spots on the stage, I'm just a big believer in that. So help your little ones out and give them spots on stage, just like in the in the classroom. Otherwise, they're going to be lost, and they're all going to be like gathered together on one side of the stage. So that was one thought that I had for sure, for at least the choreography part, and teaching dances. And as far as like, you know, I think I definitely, if she has to keep them in the line, you know, I don't know what the studio looks like, but if they have to be in lines, I'm with you 100% about rotating the lines and making that some type of fun game, like musical chairs. It's going to be musical dots. We all rotate, change our spots, or red light, green light, get to a new spot, you know, or whatever. Like make it a fun little game. Make sure everybody has a chance to be in the front. I think you make a good point too about tap. It's only your feet. And I didn't really think about that. You know, like that's hard for kids being so short and then they're in the back and they're so separated, you know. So I think definitely giving all of the kids the opportunity to move and come into the front, at least for the skill building stuff, is going to be really super important. you know? So those were really, I think, my biggest points for her, as far as just ways to make sure that everybody feels inclusive in the class, and making sure that they're all sort of meeting those milestones and everything. And then music, of course. I'm with you, like Casper Baby Pants. I just love the name. I use him a lot in my mommy and me classes.
Yes.
But yes, he's also, I could see how he can be a great fit for TAP. Lori Berkner, I think every dance teacher has heard of Lori Berkner.
Of course.
I'll need to research. Who was the first name that you said?
Dan Zanes.
Okay.
So he has, it sounds very like a lot of New Orleans kind of feel to his music. Okay. Kind of bluegrassy type. But yeah, he has good stuff too.
Cool. I'll have to look into that.
So you said a lot of great things too, Jessica. Can I just, I jotted some notes as you were talking.
Yeah.
So what you said made me think of this to clarify even more about the changing lines and the fact that she has these helpers. I wonder if she could station a helper in each row too. You know, she's in the front, one helper's kind of in the middle, and another helper's there for the back row kids to see. And then they can be in charge of each line and they can help rotate together. And then I also love your idea about the audience time and watching line by line. And they can even just sit where they're at. Sit down right where you are. You don't have to move and make it a big production. Back row, sit down. Front row, sit down. Middle row, your turn. And we all clap for our friends. Mm-hmm. I think that's a great idea. I also really agree about circles being inclusive. When I have a class who is really losing focus when we are doing choreography, I will do the same as you. We'll come back to our circle. And I think for some teachers, maybe for TAP teachers, I had to get over this myself. They get confused with right and left, right? When you're opposite of them, which foot are they using? So from my experience, what I would say is it doesn't matter right now. It doesn't matter when you're in the learning phase in the circle, who cares what foot they're doing, because they don't remember what foot they're doing. Right. When you straighten it out to the lines and they have you as a guide to watch, they're going to mimic the foot that you're on. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't get too hung up. I used to get hung up on it. Yeah. I'm speaking from experience. Don't get hung up on it.
Right.
And then I also agree with you about, I use the poly dots. That's what I use instead of tape, because the TAP shoes chew up the tape at my studio, but we use them at the recital as well. And one thing that is so great to practice is we travel. Like if we're doing a chasse side or a gallop in TAP, we travel away from our dot and then we travel back and I'll say, oh, magic, I ended up on my dot. Did you end up on yours? Mm-hmm. So we also kind of learn how far to go. And we also learn about, well, I'm not going to, you know, if I'm next to Sarah and I cross in front of her, that's not nice. I got to stay next to Sarah. I'm not trying to beat her to the right. So it's a lot of practice about that as well. And then I had one last thought. I know that we're going on here for a long time.
No worries.
For those kids that are a little harder to engage or who are maybe not catching on to the material, they're maybe not quite as natural of movers. Ask questions that have nothing to do with dance, but that have something to do with the theme. You know, today, you guys, we are going to dance like penguins. Could anyone tell me something about a penguin? And, you know, all the hands will shoot up and you could call on that child who maybe doesn't get recognized as much for what they're doing. And the fact that you made this connection with them and they're going to tap dance like a penguin and they said penguins waddle and now you're going to waddle, they're going to feel really special and probably get more engaged as right, well.
Right. Yeah.
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 So that's, yeah. So that's, those were all, as you were talking, I was jotting. I was like, oh my gosh, all these ideas.
Yeah. Well, I think her post had over 100 comments already. So she's getting a lot of feedback and help, you know, with this, but
right.
I'm like, oh, I have so many ideas and I don't feel like typing them out. So we're just going to talk about it on the podcast. Cause you never know. I think right now, I don't know. I know, maybe it's mixed, but I feel like right now, even in my classes at the studio I teach at, they're all on the larger side. And I don't know if it's because people are having a hard time hiring teachers. I know I'm personally having a hard time hiring teachers. That's a whole different subject, but
yeah.
Yeah, I just feel like these larger classes, it can be a challenge because I'm like you. I like the small, like 8 to 10 kids is enough for me. Right. But, you know, if we have the need and all these kids want to come to our dance studio, that's great. So yeah, I think she's going to have a lot of really great tips, you know, for managing a class that big and making it work. Cause that is, it's a challenge when you have,
it's a lot,
it's, you know, so, but yeah, I think just focusing on less on the regiment of being in lines and just what do my kids need? And, you know, let's stay in the circle as long as we possibly can, make sure everybody's getting it, give the extra ones extra support if they need it. And then worry about those lines at a later time. I think that's really going to be beneficial for her. I know, isn't it so funny how we get caught up on things?
Yes,
it is. It's so funny. Like, we're like, oh my gosh, this is going to be, and then the kids just do what they want anyway. Cause
right.
You know, they're kids. So they, and even mirroring them, they're still going to do the wrong foot sometimes. And you're like, well, oh, well, we tried.
We did
our best. So yeah, but no, I think all of that was great. And I hope that we helped both of our listeners today. Do you have anything else to add before we
I don't think so. This was so great to be a part of this. So I'm grateful to you for inviting me. I guess I would just say if anybody wants more information about applying themes to not only creative dance and ballet, but to tap dance, you know, come find us, come message us on social media, send us an email. You know, we have, I'm thinking about, Jessica, I guess I'll just say this to you now. I know you've got your free lesson plan, your life cycle of the butterfly. Uh-huh. And I keep thinking to myself, I need to make a companion free one.
Yeah.
That for tap that can be put on there. So it's not ready yet, but I'm percolating on that idea to kind of go with the butterfly, but make it tap dance. So really there's all kinds of resources. I have free ones. Jessica has free ones. And if you say to me, I can't commit, I got to see what this is like first, I'll send you a sample.
Yeah.
Cause I believe in it. I believe in it. And mm-hmm. I believe in what you do. And I am so appreciative that you believe in what I do too.
Yeah. I agree 100%. So let's share how people can find you and then find the lesson plans so that we can all stay connected. So you already shared your social media at the start, but why don't you share that again?
Sure.
In case you missed it.
Yes. On Instagram, it's at Dance Dance Hooray, and on Facebook, Dance Dance Hooray as well. My website, www.dancedancehooray.com. And then on my website, there's a whole page that says Tap Dance Central. If you click that, it links to all the lessons that Jessica has on Dance to Learn. It has descriptions. It lists them in the order that you can do them if you want to make them a school year length system. And then Jessica, I'll let you give the Dance to Learn direct info.
Yeah. And before I do that, I just want to say my favorite thing about your tap lesson plans is the calendar.
Oh, so, thank you.
Yeah. All of the Dance Dance Hooray tap dance lesson plans gives you a calendar so you can break it down and do something new every week, but it's all within the same lesson plan, which is really super great because if you're like Malin and you don't have time to do something new every single week, she's given you an entire month of material, which I think is fabulous. So definitely go check out the tap dance lessons on our website. You can find them. It's learn.dancetolearnuniversity.com. And then we have a whole lesson plans page. Just click on lesson plans and they're organized by either theme or dance style. We also have the Dance Dance Hooray tap dance membership. So you can get all of the tap dance lesson plans. What is it? $29 a month.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
$29 a month. And then you get all of them, or you can purchase them individually. So, but I think the membership is better because
oh yeah.
And it's just that one $29 a month. I mean, you can't beat it.
Absolutely. And you get the age 3 to 5 and the 5 to 7. And while they are different content, different exercises, I don't really repeat exercises, similar themes, but you can see how the age 3 to 5, what they learn builds up to what they can do in the next level when you see both of them side by side.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And I've been using them in my classes, and the kids just love everything. Like, we did the turkeys last night, and they really loved it. I think their favorite thing was the Thanksgiving dinner, like, obstacle course.
Yes.
You know? And I think the one listener was asking about TAP obstacle courses. I kind of saw it in the comments. So she should definitely check out your lesson plans, because they all include a tap dance obstacle course, which is... Because sometimes I think you think, oh, we can't do an obstacle course in TAP. Like, that's not a thing. But you absolutely can. And
I mean, I'll be honest. I didn't think they were a thing either until my students said, well, why can't we do an obstacle course? I want to do one like we just did in ballet. And I'm like, I got to think outside the box here a little bit. Yeah. Then I'm like, you guys are so right. I mean, the five-year-olds know where it's at.
Yeah. Yeah. Challenge accepted. No. And they love it. Yeah. They love it. I think, they did the corn on the cob thing.
Yeah.
Put out one of my little foam balance beams, and I think it was a chug that they did, and they just loved doing that. So, super cute, super fun lesson plans. So I will link all of that in the show notes. So the show notes can be found, in the podcast description. So if you're on Apple or Spotify, it's in the description. You can also go to our website. It's the preschooldanceteacherspodcast.com. And we have a show notes section, and you can get all of the links and everything on each individual episode, which is great. And I just want to share, if any other dance teachers out there, this is only the second episode, but I have been loving addressing dance teacher, you know, struggles that you guys are having and bringing in guests. Like, this has been so much fun for me, because before I was like, what else can I talk about? I don't know. I was running out of ideas. So finding ideas from all of the listeners and all the dance teachers out there has been so much fun. So, but if you have a question, I want to answer it. I want to bring on more special guests. I'm definitely going to have you back, you know, for future episodes. Like, this will not be just a one-time thing.
Right.
But if you guys have a question or a struggle or a problem or whatever, just visit the website and click on the Ask Jessica tab. And you can stay anonymous. You don't have to give me any information. Last week we did an anonymous letter from a parent, so you can remain anonymous. We don't have to call anybody out or do anything like that. But we want to answer your questions and help you out. It's why I started Dance to Learn. It's my all-time favorite thing. I have ideas, you have ideas, and we should all share them and help each other out, because we're all in this together, I think they say, you know. So
you can say that again.
We want to be a supportive dance community and help everyone out and give you guys these amazing ideas and resources and things like that. So anyway, anything else to add before we sign off today?
No, I think that's it.
Well, great. Awesome. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And thank you, Corey, for being here today. And we will see you guys on another episode next time.
Yes. Thanks, Jessica. See you guys.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast episode. You can share your opinions and feedback on today's topics on our social media pages. Just search the Preschool Dance Teachers Podcast. The Dance to Learn Podcast airs every other Thursday at 9 a.m. Mountain Time. If you are struggling in your preschool dance classes and would like tips and advice, you can ask Jessica by visiting the preschooldanceteacherspodcast.com and clicking Ask Jessica, and your question may be addressed on the air. If you're enjoying the new podcast format, let us know by leaving a 5-star review. See you next time. Happy dancing.